informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Today, a place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, good afternoon to the East Coast and good morning to the rest of America. Thank you for joining with us today on Dare to Think Out Loud here on freedomslips.com and Revolution Radio. So hope that everyone is doing well. I have with me today, as usual, my good friend Cal Robbins from out there in Arizona. And so, Cal, it is good morning for you, isn't it, sir?
It's a good morning.
It's
a we're
enjoying some springtime weather out here.
Well, good for you. It's going to be anything but springtime here in middle Georgia today and tonight. It's going to be quite cool for this part of the country. And and rather blustery with a wind chill factor that's going to be rather nasty. But, yeah, we shall endeavor to persevere. So, Cal, first of all, I would like to pass along my condolences to my good friend and co-host, Daryl Wayne, from Addicted to Your Own Destruction, and at the loss of his mother yesterday, and also the fact that Daryl Wayne is not doing well at all himself health-wise. And so I would ask for all of you folks out there who are so inclined to please include Daryl Wayne in your prayers. And so having said that, we will now move along. Yesterday on the program with Jim Ram, Do-It-Yourself Health, we talked about the Constitutional Convention and the fact that Robert Yates and John Lansing Jr., two of the three delegates from New York, left in July of 1787 because, and in their letter to Governor Clinton, they said that the reason that they left was because they felt like if they stayed, they would be violating the authority that had been granted to them by the people of the state of New York, that they would to stay would have exceeded their powers, and they were not about to sell their fellow New Yorkers down the highway like all of those who stayed eventually did, except for those who refused to sign. So in discussing that, then today, Cal and I are going to jump into a discussion about the folks in Pennsylvania. Now, many are unaware of the fact that all eight delegates, Pennsylvania elected eight delegates to the Constitutional Convention, and all eight of them were from the same place. Now, and that would have been Philadelphia. I do not understand for a moment how anyone could think in any stretch of the imagination that the people of Pennsylvania were represented by these eight people, all wealthy aristocracy and all from Philadelphia. So I'm not sure how they think that the state of Pennsylvania was properly represented. And we shall get into that because it got even worse than that. So, Cal, were you able to pick up on the descent of the minority in Pennsylvania? You're muted, buddy. There you are.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, I keep hitting the button too many times. No, yeah, the address of the seceding assemblyman dated the 29th of September. And then there's a descent of the minority of the convention from the 12th of December. So there was quite a bit of dissent in Pennsylvania.
Well, here's the thing that we weren't taught in school. And for obvious reasons, was that a week, just a week and a day, I believe, Cal, after the Constitutional Convention convened on September the 17th, and the Constitution as written and signed by 39 of the delegates had been sent to the Congress, and the Congress sent it out to the states. Now, a week or so later, Pennsylvania had not even received the Constitution. So they did not, the people did not know what was in it. And especially the legislature of Pennsylvania did not know what was in it. Yet George Clymer, who had been a delegate from Philadelphia and who had actually been at the Constitutional Convention, he knew what was in it. And he called for a convention or for the legislature to ratify the Constitution before they had even received it. Now,
exactly.
That in so many ways is so telling about what the Federalists were trying to do here. They wanted the people of Pennsylvania to assume the Nancy Pelosi theory of government. Let's just pass this thing so we can find out what's in it. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi's ideas back then about the Health Care Act were not unique, and they certainly weren't original because the Federalists wanted to do that to start with. But what happened in Pennsylvania, which is unique, is enough of the delegates from the rest of the state saw what Clymer was trying to do. And so they went, no, we're not even showing up at your called convention, and we can deprive you of a quorum. And they felt like this was the only way that they could actually help prevent the Constitution being ratified without reading it. So they met at a boarding house, the dissenting, and there were enough dissenting to keep it from actually having a quorum, which actually happened. The Clymer called the meeting. They didn't have a quorum, so they couldn't. But then when they found out that they didn't have a quorum, Clymer and several others, McKean and others, actually sent the sergeant of arms with an armed mob to go and grabbed these delegates. They were actually, by several reports, were actually beaten and carried in to the convention so that they would have a forum so that they could vote on the Constitution. Now, Cal, one of the things I found interesting was that in a lot of the notes was that George Bryant, who was a judge in Pennsylvania, had been with these minority, with these delegates, and he had been talking with them. But the judge wasn't there when they, when the mob got there to drag these people back to the convention. So what good can be said about a government, Cal, if you have to drag delegates to a convention to ratify something you're not going to let them read?
It just goes to show what the Federalists were up to. Even parsing through this, I mean, I think it's okay. It's important to remember the Constitutional Convention, what's been called the Constitutional Convention, was held in Philadelphia. And on September 17th, they sent that Constitution to the Continental Congress, which is in New York. Now, it's about a week, 5 days to 7 days travel it back in that time from Philadelphia to New York, roughly. Unless you go express, you could probably get it done in 4 days if you have express riders, which is what Hamilton did, but that's an aside. So it takes a week to get it to the Congress, the Continental Congress, for them to send it to the states. So it would normally take 2 weeks on, you know, everything going right to get that the Constitution, which was written in Philadelphia, back to Philadelphia. So George Clymer, who was there, he already had a copy of it. He already knew what it was. All of those delegates that are part of the political elite in Philadelphia who were, you know, delegates at the convention, they already had copies of it. They already knew what was in it. So they had a leg up, so to speak, then. So they're calling for a convention on the 28th, which would be 11 days after the Constitution came out of convention. So, yeah, like you said, the rest of the people what did they call the Pennsylvania House? Well, it was the House of Pennsylvania. They had no idea. They didn't know what was in it. Yeah, here is the head of it, George Clymer, calling for a convention to ratify it, and these people haven't even seen it yet. So that just goes to show how they were trying to shove this Constitution down the throats of everybody. And it's really interesting when you get into the address of the seceding assemblyman written on the day after, the 29th of September. And I'm hopefully we parse through that today, Mike. But I just want to put that timeline in there because there's two dissents. There's one from the assembly, and there's one from the convention of the ratification convention. So there's two different dissents that we're going to be talking about here.
Right.
And this first one is, you know, is 12 days after the Constitution came out of the convention in Philadelphia, but had to go to New York to get back to Philadelphia. Just had to go through that stuff. I just wanted to put that timeline out there because it gets, if you don't follow the timeline, it gets confusing on what, understanding what's going on here. Well, so I hope that helped clear it up a little bit.
Well stated, Cal, and it is imperative that you put the timeline in because it's, you need that to completely understand this. But as we're looking at this, other than the Health Care Act, which Nancy Pelosi said, let's pass it so we can find out what's in it, in recent history, have we had a similar thing happen in this country to what happened with the Philadelphia Convention, Cal?
Pretty much everything Congress does.
Well, I mean, let's look at
there's no way that you can go through a 1,000-page bill in 2 days and then vote on it. There's just no way you can do that. It's physically impossible. Yet they do it all the time.
All right. Well, let's bring up the Patriot Act of 2001.
There you go.
And suddenly they bring up the Patriot Act. Of course, George Bush is president. And if you're not with us, you're with the terrorist and all of his other crap. And So they want to pass this Patriot Act, but they don't want the people to know what's in it, and they don't even want the people who are going to vote for it to know what's in it. So we're seeing a replay of the Philadelphia Convention in modern day times. And believe it or not, there were several, three or four Democrats who said, no, we can't sign this without reading it. You know, those terrible Democrats that all need to be hanged, according to the Trumpites. But here were these people who said, no, we can't do this without reading it first. And Cal, what happened to those people?
They got removed. They were unelected the next term. They were voted out.
Well,
the Democrat Party pushed them out.
But what happened?
The powers that be.
What happened to them almost immediately?
Oh, they all got a letter.
With anthrax in it.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I want to point out, how can they even put that bill together as fast as they did, the Patriot Act? They already had this in mind. Unless it was pre-planned and they had all this stuff and they just had to copy and paste and put stuff together real quick. How could they even assemble the Patriot Act as quickly as they did?
Well, Cal, my information and my sources, the things that I have been able to track down, indicate that the Patriot Act was in place and ready to be adopted after Oklahoma City in 97. So it was already there, and the government thought that, hey, we can get this through, but then there was enough blowback on Oklahoma City and enough questions to be asked that they just held it in abeyance until they could have the next false flag event in America so they could push it then. And, of course, with the Democrats, three or four Democrats going, oh, no, I can't sign this. And then they get letters with anthrax in them. And as a matter of fact, one member of their staff actually died from the anthrax. And then they trace the anthrax to where?
Maryland.
Yeah.
Wait, what's in Maryland?
Fort Detrick.
Oh yeah.
And
wait a minute, Mike. You're telling me that they were plotting this way prior in advance?
Oh,
kind of like the Federalists did with the Constitution?
Well, and kind of
like 1785.
And kind of like this COVID pandemic?
Yeah. I mean,
planned far in advance.
Is there a pattern here?
Well, I think there is considerable evidence out there that would reveal that the anthrax that was sent to the Democratic members of Congress who were opposing the Patriot Act, that this Fort Detrick is the same place where this COVID-19 bioweapon was produced. I think there's considerable evidence for that. So, to go back to old George Santayana, who said, those who fail to learn the lessons of history are destined to repeat its mistakes. You think that might be happening, Cal?
Most definitely. And until people catch on to what's going on, it'll continue.
Well, I think it was Marcus Tullius Cicero who said that a people who are ignorant of their own history will be forever children.
Well, when you look at, you know, how they've dumbed down everything, it's on, what, fifth, sixth grade level?
Right.
I mean, I can't even watch the news. It's just insulting me anymore. I can't stoop that low anymore. I'm sorry. The way people interact with each other, it's like, it reminds me of elementary school.
Well, does it even exceed middle school, junior high? Does it even exceed that? Because look at the actions of these people in reference to COVID. Does that resemble what the people in junior high were like, or, you know, sixth to ninth grade, Cal?
Oh yeah. Look at the what is it? Let's go, Brandon. I mean, everybody's jumped on this bandwagon. It's like, this is the popular fad in school today. It's just each passing fad, and it's just crazy. Everybody's got to jump on the latest fad. The media puts out some word, and everybody jumps on that word or that phrase for a week, 2 weeks, a month. And it's just a popular thing to do. And it's just like a fad from junior high school. It's like you guys are just led around by, you know, like a bunch of bulls with a ring in your nose. It's crazy.
Well, Cal, I've noticed traveling around central Georgia here, if you stop at a service station and to get fuel, there will be a little sticker on the fuel pumps, a sticker of Joe Biden pointing to the price saying, I did this.
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, haven't people figured out by now that Joe Biden is, I mean, he's a window licker. He's got dementia. He's not in charge. He ain't running things. He's a figurehead. He's a puppet. But yeah, he's the target. And it's like they've got target fixation on the wrong target. It just, I don't know. I don't get it.
Well,
that's junior high mentality.
Absolutely. Absolutely, buddy. Of course, we mentioned an attendee possibly at this place in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, who a member of the minority, who was George Bryan, a judge. Are most Americans familiar with who his son was, Cal?
Whoop. There we go. Hit the right button. Most people probably aren't. That would be Samuel Bryan, also known as Sentinel, an anti-federalist writer, one of the most articulate writers of the anti-federalists.
Well, there are those, Cal, who would say that the Sentinel essays were written sometimes by George Bryan as well as Samuel. And there is no way to prove that false.
No, there's not. And, you know, I mean, for, you know, they are father and son, for those two to talk with each other, and for, you know, Samuel Bright to write something and then show it to his dad goes, well, you know, what if we change this or this? That would make total sense anyway. You know, that would just be human nature. So for George Bryant to have had influence on what Samuel Bryant wrote as Sentinel, that would just make sense. That's just, you know, looking at it without knowing for sure. But that would be my postulation on that.
You know, Cal, looking at this event that happened in Philadelphia, Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania, naturally, which we are talking about, and this convention that they were trying to put together, I found it just absolutely humorous that Tench Cox, who was rumored, he was referred to in Pennsylvania as he who looks both ways, because Tench Cox was a very big supporter in Philadelphia when the British Army was there. He was a very large supporter of the crown during that time because he was a businessman and he was selling products and supplies and equipment to the British Army during the Revolutionary War. And so Tench Cox sends a letter to James Madison trying to explain what happened with that first convention, and he expresses his, just absolute he expresses his surprise that the people at the delegation in Pennsylvania brought together by George Clymer, he expresses, you know, why were they upset? Just because they couldn't see the Constitution? Just because they didn't know what was in it? How is that a reason not to approve it? Were you able to read that letter, Cal?
No, I haven't read that letter. That's Tench Cox to Madison?
Yeah, Tench Cox to Madison. And as I am speaking right now, I am forwarding that to you, sir, by email so that you will have it. I'm sorry. I thought I sent it to you earlier. I possibly did not do so. So, my apologies, but it is currently on the way to you.
Awesome.
So, you know, what about these Federalists? Here is Tench Cox, obviously a monarchist. He was also an attendee at the Constitutional Convention, a man who was known among his fellow citizens as he who looks both ways.
So he would be one of those that Mercer said was a monarchist.
Monarchist. Absolutely. He's on the list. And Cal, I must apologize. I hadn't sent you that letter from Mercer to Luther Martin yet. I apologize for that. I just thought of it. I'll try to get that to you. I'll try to get that to you post haste.
I appreciate it.
Then, you know, we look at this and there are a couple of other letters. There was a letter from Samuel Hodgdon to Timothy Pickering in Philadelphia on the 29th of September. And that is it's a very short letter, but it's also relevant to what we're speaking of. And Cal, that is on its way to you by email as we speak as well. And I apologize. I probably should have done these things before. But these letters, as you and I both know, if you want to know the true history about what was going on at this time, all you have to do is read the letters between these people, and you can pick out the criminal conspiracy from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. You can trace it. Yeah, you can trace it back to at least 1775. You can go further than that if you follow Hamilton.
All right.
When the article of 1781, you could trace it to all the way back with Hamilton.
Right. And there was also an article in the what was called the Pennsylvania Herald on the 29th of September in 1787 that, you know, that is talking about this convention. And that is just absolutely unreal. And for those of you who would wonder about the source of these letters that we mentioned, I would tell you this, that if you want to really find these sources that I have mentioned previously are found at the University of Virginia in what is called the Rotunda Press. And they have all of these letters on file. And I was fortunate enough back in the late 80s to go in and look at many of these letters, which were at that time, along with the Library of Congress and the National Archives, these letters were just blowing my mind. And it was revealing the absolute truth of what we have been lied to about over and over and over again. So there's also
what gets me, Mike, is you have the parchment worship, you have the parchment worshipers out there, the 10th Amendment Centers, the Christian Halls, and their accolades, who you bring this stuff up to them and they refuse to address it. They just choose to ignore it. And I don't get that. They keep talking about, well, we're talking about history. And it's like, well, you're only talking about part of it and you're only talking about one side of it. And it's, you know, it can be proven as false. And once you prove something false, you can't prove it true again. And I don't get how they just will not grasp that there's a truth out there, but they say they want the truth, but yet you give them the truth and they reject it. I just don't understand that.
Well, Cal, imagine if you are, you know, Barton or Chris Ann Hall or the 10th Amendment Center. Imagine if you have been telling people blatant lies for years and collecting money for doing so. What do you have to do to tell people, hey, you've been paying me to lie to you for decades?
Well, it would seem to me they'd say, look, I was wrong. I didn't know. I mean, you know, Chris Ann Hall, she says liberty first, but yeah, liberty requires truth, yet she ignores the truth. And so how can liberty be first? I mean, for her, it's Constitution and money first, not liberty first, because I don't know. It just blows my mind. I mean, once you become aware of these letters and you read through these letters and you see what was truly going on, it's like that bell, you know, that once you ring the bell of truth, you can't unhear it. But people just won't hear that bell. And everybody knows things are messed up, but they want, and they want to fix it, but you got to know why it's messed up before you can fix it. Because I look at all the proposals people come up with and it's just more of the same. It's just, oh, well, we'll just change the people who are there. Well, it's not the people, it's the system. The whole system was, it was a criminal conspiracy. The whole system was designed to empower the wealthy and well-born. That's what it was designed to do. It wasn't to ensure the rights and liberty of the people. Yeah, sure, they said it. If I was going to sell you a bill of goods, I'd tell you the same thing too. It'd be a lie, but you know, if I was a dishonest person that way, I that's what I would tell you too. It's just bait and switch. It's marketing. And I don't know.
Cal,
I just hope we get into this address of the seceding assemblyman. I mean, this should explain it. If you can go through this and still think that the Constitution is some divinely inspired thing that everybody agreed to, this address of the seceding assemblyman from Philadelphia on the 29th of September, 1787, it should dispel anything, or at least put the big enough doubt in your mind that you go, what else have they lied to me about?
Well, Cal, going back to the other part that we discussed, if you have been someone who has been selling people DVDs and making a lot of money, or traveling around the country giving presentations as a constitutional attorney and telling people falsehoods for years and collecting quite a bit of money for it, how obligated are you to return people their money if you reveal to them everything I've taught you is a lie?
I don't know. I guess your credibility, your source of income would dry up. I don't think, it's kind of a buyer beware. I mean, if you gave them money, then you gave them money to be lied to. Sorry, they lied to you. Buyer beware. You know, I wouldn't say Chris Ann Hall would owe anybody back their money they've given to her. She might lose her support and not have that money in there. But if she's truly about liberty first, she would tell the truth. She would at least engage and look at what the anti-federalists had to say. She would look and present the full truth to her listening audience, to her accolades. But let them decide.
She also dresses up as Mercy Otis Warren, and she doesn't read what Mercy Otis Warren wrote about the Constitution.
Yeah, well.
Yeah,
sure. Well, anyway, let's move. Quotes. Yeah. She continually quotes Patrick Henry and Mercy Warren.
Well, let's move away from that and let's get back to our subject, Cal. And why don't you start reading that dissent and let's examine that, sir.
Okay. The address of the There we are. Okay. The address of the seceding assemblyman, 29 September 1787. Gentlemen, when in consequence of your suffrages at the last election, we were chosen to represent you in the General Assembly of this Commonwealth, we accepted of the important trust with a determination to execute in the best manner we were able. And we flatter ourselves we acted in such a manner as to convince you that your interest with that of the good of the state has been the object of our measures. So these are the elected representatives of the districts of Pennsylvania, representing them in the General Assembly of the Commonwealth. That's what they were called, the General Assembly. I know when the House was General Assembly. Okay, back to it. During the fall and spring sessions of the legislature, on the recommendation of the Congress of the United States, your representatives proceeded to appoint the appointment of delegates to attend a convention to be held in the city of Philadelphia. They're talking about the Constitutional Convention, for the purposes of revising and amending the present Articles of Confederation. Let me read that again. For the purpose of revising and amending the present Articles of Confederation, and to report their proceedings to Congress, and when adopted by them and ratified by the several states, to become binding on them as part of the Confederation of the United States. The Confederation of the United States. We lamented at the time that the majority of our legislature appointed men to represent the state who were all citizens of Philadelphia. So the whole of Philadelphia is being represented, or the whole of Pennsylvania is being totally represented by Philadelphia. none of them calculated to represent the landed interest of Pennsylvania. In other words, the yeoman farmers, and almost all of them of one political party, meaning the Federalists, men who had been uniformly opposed to that Constitution, for which you have on every occasion manifested your attachment. In other words, these people that are being sent there have said they don't like the Articles of Confederation, even though you, people who sent us here, say you do like the Articles of Confederation. We are apprehensive at the time of the ill consequences of so partial a representation, but all opposition was in vain. When the convention met, members from 12 states attended. Remember, there were 13 states, only 12 attended. Rhode Island wasn't there. And after deliberating upwards of 4 months on the subject, agreed on a plan of government that was sent forward by them to Congress, which is in New York, and which was reported to the House by the delegates of Pennsylvania as mere matter of information and printed in the newspaper of the city of Philadelphia. But the House had not received it officially from Congress. So the Philadelphia papers are printing it up before Congress has even really sent it back to them. Nor had we the least idea that this annual election was so near. In other words, the election of appointing delegates for the ratification convention. We should be called up to deliberate, much less to act on so momentous a business of the utmost importance to you and your posterity. We conceived it required the most minute examination and mature consideration, and that it ought to be taken up by the next House. Judge then of our surprise on finding the last day, but one in the sessions, a member of the House, George Clymer, who had been a delegate to the convention without any previous notice or intimation of his intentions of the House, offer a resolution recommending the calling of a convention to consider the proposed Constitution and to direct the electing members for the same at so early a period as the day of your annual election, thus attempting to surprise you into a choice of members to approve or disapprove of a constitution, which is to entail happiness or misery forever without giving time of the greatest part of the state to even see, much less to examine the plan of government. So right here, the Federalists, you can see they're trying to force it through before they can even go through it and understand the Constitution. To understand what's being proposed to them. They want to have a convention, and well, Pennsylvania wanted to be first, but I guess Delaware beat them to it. So do we need to parse through this anymore, Mike? Or?
No, go ahead. I'm enjoying this where we're going, and I've just got a couple of comments I'll throw at it afterwards.
No. If we're going through, feel free to interrupt and you know, because I think it's important. It's taken me a couple of times of reading through this to grasp exactly what these men are saying.
Well, let me throw in here what Samuel Bryan had to say about this same period of time. What Samuel Bryan, who wrote as Sentinel, what did he say about this Constitution? And he said, the evil genius of darkness presided at its birth. It came forth under the veil of mystery, its true features being carefully concealed, and every deceptive art has been and is practicing to have this spurious brat received as the genuine offspring of heaven-born liberty. So fearful are its patrons that you should discern the imposition, that they have hurried on its adoption, and we're addressing that today, with the greatest precipitation. After so recent a triumph over British despots, after such torrents of blood and treasure have been spent, after involving ourselves in the distresses of an arduous war, and incurring such a debt for the express purpose of asserting the rights of humanity, it is truly astonishing that a set of men among ourselves should have the effrontery to attempt the destruction of our liberties. But in this enlightened age, to hope to dupe the people by the arts they are practicing is still more extraordinary. Unquote. Go ahead, Cal.
All right, I'll continue. No, that fits in perfectly, Mike. Our duty to ourselves and our regard for your dearest interests induced us to oppose the measure by every possible argument that we could suggest at the time. But all our efforts were insufficient even to produce a postponement until the afternoon. We urged and urged in vain the constant practice of the House when any important business was brought up was brought on, of giving previous notice and making it the order of the day sometime beforehand, that no bill, however trifling, was passed without three readings and without this formality which gave the members time and opportunity to think on the subject, that the rules were adhered to so strictly that even the building of a bridge or the laying out of a road could not be determined on without this form. But this, the most important of all matters, was to be done by surprise and, as we conceived, with design to preclude you from having it in your power to deliberate on the subject. Our anxiety for your interest was great, but notwithstanding the firmest and most determined opposition. No respite could be obtained. And on the first resolution was adopted by the majority of the House, when they adjourned till the afternoon to complete the business. In this circumstance, we had no alternative. We were under a necessity of either returning to the House and, by our presence, enabling them to call a convention before our constituents could have the means of information or time to deliberate on this subject, or by abstaining ourselves from the House, prevent the measure from taking place. Our regard for you induced us to prefer the latter, and we determined not to attend in the afternoon. We conceived that at the time we were chosen, you had no view to this business, and we could see no inconvenience nor loss of time from deferring a matter of such importance and which would in its consequence affect or perhaps annihilate our own Constitution, meaning the Constitution of Pennsylvania, as well as that of every constitution in the Union, to a House chosen after the people had some knowledge of the plan, especially as the next House will meet at so early a period, and a convention could be called by them time enough to meet in a few months, which would be as early as any state in the Union would be allowing you time to make up your minds on a matter which appeared to us to require so much deliberation. Thus circumstanced and thus influenced, we determined the next morning again to absent ourselves from the House. When James McClant, Esquire, a member from Franklin, and Jacob Miley, Esquire, a member from Dauphin, were seized by a number of citizens of Philadelphia who had collected together for that purpose. Their lodgings were violently broken open, their clothes torn, and after much abuse and insult, they were forcibly dragged through the streets of Philadelphia to the State House, and there detained by force, and in the presence of a majority who had, the day before, voted the first of the proposed resolutions, treated with the most insulting language, while the House so formed proceeded to finish the resolutions, which they mean to offer you as the doings of the legislature of Pennsylvania. On this outrageous proceedings, we make no comment. The inhabitants of Franklin and Dauphin have been grossly insulted by the treatment of their members. In other words, their doing this insulted the people who placed them there in the House from Franklin County and Dauphin. We know the feelings of the people of these counties are sufficiently keen. It becomes us not to add to them by dwelling longer on the subject, but as our conduct may, and we have no doubt, will be misrepresented. We thought it our duty to lay before our constituents, to whom alone we are accountable, the real state of facts, that they may judge for themselves. We need not tell you that we could have no interested motive to influence our conduct. A sense of that duty which we owe to you and to ourselves could have alone induced us to submit to the variety of abuses and insults which many of us have experienced for not consenting to a measure that might probably have surprised you into a surrender of your dearest rights. Our conduct has at least had a good effect to lengthen out the time of election and induce them to postpone the election for its members of the convention, meaning the ratification convention, until the first Tuesday in November next. whereas the resolutions first proposed directed it to be holden for all the counties east of Bedford on the day of the annual election, 9 days from the time of the proposed measure. So they didn't have a quorum, and so they forcibly dragged enough members that were dissenting into the House to force them to create a quorum so that they could force their vote through. I mean, how is that consent of the governed?
How in any way can anyone hear this? How can anyone hear this and believe that this government was designed to be a government which would protect the freedom and the rights of the people?
How is it a government of, for, and by the people?
Yes, exactly.
This flies in the face of everything that I grew up learning. This is mind blowing. Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, but if you've got more at it, because.
No. I was just making a comment to keep going. I'm loving this.
Every time I read through it, it's just, wow, I just learned more. It's crazy. Okay, we'll continue. We cannot conclude without requesting you to turn your serious attention to the government now offered to your consideration. We are persuaded that a free and candid discussion of any subject tends greatly to the improved knowledge, and that a matter in which the public are so deeply interested cannot be too well understood. A good constitution and government is a blessing from heaven and the right of posterity and mankind. Suffer then, we entreat you, no interest, motive, sinister view, or important influence to direct your determinations or bias your judgment. Provide yourselves with the new constitution offered to you by the convention. Look it over with attention that you be enabled to think for yourselves. We confess, when the legislature appointed the delegates to attend the convention, our ideas extended no further than a revision or amendment to the present confederation, meaning the Articles of Confederation, nor were our delegates, by the acts of assembly appointed them, authorized to do more, as will appear by referring to this said act, the second section of which describes their powers in the following words. Number two, this is what the House of Pennsylvania charged their delegates in the convention with. Be it enacted, and it is hereby enacted, by the representatives of the freemen of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in General Assembly met, and by the authorized of the same, that Thomas Mifflin, Robert Morris, George Climas, Jared Ingersoll, Thomas Fitzsimmons, James Wilson, and Gouverneur Morris, Esquires, are hereby appointed deputies from this state to meet in the convention of the deputies of the respective states of North America. He didn't say United States. He said the respective states of North America. To be held at the city of Philadelphia on the second day of the month of May next. And that said Thomas Mifflin, Robert Morse, George Clymer, Jared Ingersoll, Thomas Fitzsimmons, James Wilson, and Gouverneur Morris, Esquires, or any four of them are hereby constituted and appointed deputies from this state with powers to meet such deputies as may be appointed and authorized by the other states to assemble in the said convention at the city aforesaid and to join with them in devising, deliberating on, and discussing all such alterations and further provisions as may be necessary to render the federal constitution, meaning the Articles of Confederation, fully adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and in reporting on such acts or acts for that purpose to the United States and Congress assembled, as when agreed to them by them and duly confirmed by the several states, will effectually provide for the same. Should we parse through that and explain that, Mike?
Well, what it means is that the legislature of Pennsylvania empowered those delegates mentioned twice with only the authority to amend the Articles of Confederation. And I think the next paragraph, which you will read, Cal, illustrates the criminal conspiracy which occurred in Philadelphia by the 8 delegates so chosen. One of the things I would like to do is to point out that one of these members, one of these people elected to be a representative, one Jared Ingersoll, was in fact the chief collector of the Stamp Act in the state of Pennsylvania under the authority of King George. So we have a representative we know, Jared Ingersoll, who was an agent of the Crown, who was at the Constitutional Convention, and who was selected by the people of, or the legislature of Pennsylvania, to attend the Constitutional Convention, which completely blows my mind, because they knew this. During the Stamp Act rebellions, they burned Jared Ingersoll's house to the ground. The Sons of Liberty did. And yet this agent of the Crown is then elected by the legislature. What does that tell you about the legislature itself, Cal?
Well, yeah, it tells you that you had people who were loyal to the Crown in the legislature. Ooh. I guess Jared Ingersoll would be another one of those on Mercer's list.
Oh, he definitely was. As a matter of fact, well, he was the second one listed.
Mike, it's also important to point out that, you know, there were, at this present time, they're operating under the Articles of Confederation. So any amendment to the Articles would go to the Congress. That's why it went to the Congress, then was supposed to go back to the state legislatures for the state legislatures to decide upon it.
But
the convention of the people. And it had to be approved by all 13 states, even though Rhode Island didn't even attend the convention.
But the Federalists knew if they submitted it to the legislatures of the state, it would be defeated. That's
yes.
Why they submitted it to new conventions. And the delegates to these conventions were controlled by the Federalists.
Yes. There's a conspiracy going on here.
Well,
they're ramming something down your throat. We'll read that next paragraph. Here we go.
Okay, buddy.
You will therefore perceive that they had no authority whatever from the legislature to annihilate the present confederation and form a new constitution entirely new. And in doing which, they have acted as merely individuals, not as official deputies of this commonwealth. Let that sink in for a minute, people. Let me read that again. You will therefore perceive that they had no authority whatever from the legislature. And the legislature is the representatives of the people. Okay? So they had no authority from the people to do what they did. They had no authority whatever from the legislature, from the people, to annihilate the present confederation and form a constitution entirely new. And in doing which, they have acted as merely individuals, not as official deputies of this commonwealth. So they acted on their own behalf, not on the behalf of the people. If, so how is this a government of the people? If, however, after much deliberation, you are of opinion that the plan of government which they have offered for your consideration is best calculated to promote your political happiness and preserve those invaluable privileges which you present enjoy, you will no doubt choose men to represent you in convention who will adopt it. If you think otherwise, you will, in your usual firmness, determine accordingly. In other words, they're saying they've done everything they can, but this is going through. So the next step in stopping it is in the ratification convention. So you people who elected to put us here better choose wisely on who you send to this convention so that you can stop your liberties from being taken from you. Am I reading that correctly, Mike?
Yes, sir, you are.
But again, these people who created the Constitution acted as individuals, not as so who were they representing? They weren't representing the people. Yeah, that's critical to understand. So this can't be a government of the people when it was created by these individuals who operated outside of their authority. Okay, we'll continue. You have a right, and we have no doubt you will consider whether or not you are in a situation to support the expense of such a government as is now offered to you, as well as the expense of your state governments, or whether a legislature consisting of three branches, neither of them chosen annually, and that the Senate, the most powerful, the members of which are for 6 years, are likely to lessen your burdens or increase your taxes, or whether in case your state government should be annihilated. I mean, why have a state government when you have this government is what they're saying.
Which why will pay for both?
Why pay for both? Why are we doing that now? Which will probably be the case, or dwindle to a mere corporation. So they're saying either the states are going to be completely annihilated, or they're just going to become vassals of this federal government. Well, the latter is the case. The states are just vassals. Either way, sovereignty is lost. Oh, wait, they'll say that. The continental government will be competent to attend to, the continental government will be competent to attend your local concerns? Question mark. You can also best determine whether the power of levying and imposing internal taxes at pleasure will be of real use to you or not, or whether a continental collector assisted by a few faithful soldiers will be more eligible than your present collector of taxes. You will also, in your deliberations on this important business, judge whether the liberty of the press may be considered as a blessing or a curse in a free government. People are doing that still today. And whether a declaration of the preservation of it is necessary, or whether a plan of government, any declaration of rights, should be prefixed or inserted. You will remember there's no declaration of rights in this constitution that's being proposed.
You will vote it down unanimously.
By state, yes, it was. They didn't say it was, well, it would be in the way. They didn't think it was necessary. You will be able, likewise, to determine whether in a free government there ought or ought not to be any provisions against a standing army in times of peace, or whether a trial by jury in civil cases is become dangerous and ought to be abolished, and whether the judiciary of the United States is not so constructed as to absorb and destroy the judiciaries of the several states. Wait, that happened too. You will also be able to judge whether such inconveniences have been experienced by the present mode of trial between citizens and citizens of a different state as to render a continental court necessary for that purpose, or whether there can be any real issue used to the appellate jurisdiction.
Hold up there, buddy. We got music. Folks, we'll be back with you on the flip side. Thank you for joining us at Dare to Think Out Loud.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone. Welcome to the crypt.
The Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, folks, to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 28th day of January in the year of 2022. And my friend Cal Robbins and I are, I believe, fashioning a concrete case against what I consider to be the greatest deception in the history of man, and that was the Constitution of the United States on the people of this country for the past 233 years. But we were into the reading, and Cal was doing it so adroitly. Cal, you want to jump in there and finish? Let's finish with this so we can move to the next one.
Okay. Well, I'll back up the previous sentence. You got to remember, sentences back then were quite lengthy. So we're going to back up a little bit. Okay. You will, if he's speaking, these are the congressmen speaking to their constituents. You will be able to likewise to determine whether in a free government there ought or ought not to be any provision against a standing army in time of peace, or whether the trial of jury in civil causes is become dangerous and ought to be abolished, and whether the judiciary of the United States not so constructed as to absorb and destroy the judiciaries of the several states. You will also be able to judge whether such inconveniences have been experienced by the present mode of trial between citizen and citizen of different states as to render a continental court necessary for that purpose, or whether there can be any real use of the appellate jurisdiction with respect to facts as well as law. In other words, should we have jury nullification or not? We shall not dwell longer on the subject. One thing, however, it is proper you should be informed of. The convention was not unanimous with respect to men, though they were as the states. In other words, it was the Constitution was approved unanimously by state, but there were dissenting men within that. Several of those who have signed did not fully approve of the plan of government, and three of the members, such as Governor Randolph, the Colonel George Mason of Virginia, and Elbridge Gerry, Esquire of Massachusetts, whose characters are very respectable, had such strong objections as to refuse signing. The Confederation, no doubt, is defective and requires amendment and revision. And had the convention extended their plan to enabling the United States to regulate commerce, equalize the impulse, collect it throughout the United States, and have the entire jurisdiction over maritime affairs, leaving the exercise of internal taxation to the separate states, we apprehend there would have been no objection to this plan of government. The matter will be before you, and you will be able to judge for yourselves. Show that you seek not for yourselves, but the good of your country. And may he, in this capital he, so he's talking about God, who alone has determined over the passions and understandings of men enlightened and direct you all right, that posterity may bless God for the wisdom of their ancestors. And then it's signed by the 16 men who collaborated to write this. James McClamont, John Gilchrist, Robert Clark, Abraham Smith, Jacob Miley, Robert Whitehall, Alexander Wright, David Mitchell, John McDowell, John Piper, John Franklin, Samuel Dale, James Allison, William Findlay, Theophilus Phillips, and James Barr. And this is dated September 29, 1787. Now, September 29, 1787, I don't think the official Constitution from the Continental Congress has even made it back to Philadelphia yet. So everything's being done off of, I guess you could say it's a smuggled copy of the Constitution from one of the delegates from Philadelphia who had it printed up in the paper. Would that be an accurate assessment, Mike?
Yes, as a matter of
officially,
fact.
Officially, the true Constitution, taking the proper steps, you can call them proper steps, hasn't even made it back to Philadelphia, and yet here we are calling for a convention, and we're already responding to it, even though it officially hasn't even come back to the Congress yet.
Well,
so we're kind of jumping the gun everywhere.
The evidence bears that out, Cal. The actual transmission from the U.S. Congress had not been received in Philadelphia at the time of the letter that you just read.
So it took almost 2 weeks just to get it through the Congress.
Exactly.
I mean, because back then travel wasn't that easy. Things happened, you know. A rainstorm could mud out the road and you couldn't travel for 2 or 3 days. It was just the way things were back then. So it wasn't like just getting in your car and driving from Philadelphia to New York City. Wow. This kind of just leaves you kind of speechless, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And then let's get into when they finally, the dissent of the minority after Pennsylvania had ratified the Constitution. And you mentioned earlier that Delaware beat Pennsylvania to the punch as being the first state, and you will find that prominently displayed on the license tag of the state of Delaware, the first state. But the thing they don't tell you is that in the selection of the delegation to ratify the Constitution of the United States was that in Delaware there was not one anti-federalist in their convention, and the state of Delaware ratified the U.S. Constitution without reading it.
Well, Delaware convened their convention on December 4th, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And they ratified it 3 days later.
And it wasn't read.
So
they did not read it by parts. They did not take it apart. They did not examine it. And even, you know, how do you examine going through all of the machinations of an assembly, you know, the electing of the chairman, all of this other stuff? How in the world could you dissect a constitution took 4 months to write in 3 days anyway?
Yeah, it just blows conventional thinking if you actually stop and think about it.
Well, also, Cal, you touched on something that is very, very, very important, and it's not mentioned in so many circles, is that in many of the states, if you dig down into the documents and start reading these things, many of the states, those who opposed the Constitution of the United States of 1787 did so because they believed that that Constitution nullified their individual states' constitutions. And that would be true.
Yes,
because
that would be.
The states had Bill of Rights in their constitutions, and the Constitution as ratified annulled and made null and void each of those rights claimed by the people. And I don't think enough people actually consider that. So, Cal, are we ready to move into the dissent of the minority of the Pennsylvania Convention in December 18th, 1787?
December 12th, wasn't it? That's what mine says.
I've got December 18th.
I've got, okay. Well, mine says the 12th. You know, 6 days apart. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Hopefully I have you read what you got. I might have the wrong thing.
Well, do you know who wrote this?
Samuel Bryan, probably with help of
yes.
his father.
Yes, Samuel Bryan was the author of this, who wrote as Sentinel and wrote those essays. So I will begin with the dissent of the minority of the Pennsylvania Convention. These, after the Constitution had been ratified, the minority who opposed the Constitution felt like they needed to address this. And so they
Let's make a point here. I mean, you're seeing it today. People who dissent, are their voices being squelched?
Yes.
Are people of dissent, you don't have to agree with what they're saying. Are people being deplatformed? Is the expression that's used?
Absolutely.
Is that not happening today? Did that not happen to the anti-federalists?
Well, just ask Mark Zuckerberg.
But that happened to the anti-federalists back then, too.
Oh, yes. And it also happened in the newspapers because many
yes.
of the newspapers just chose not to present any of the objections to the Constitution. So Zuckerberg's previous ancestry took care of this very well.
So history is repeating itself. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's get into the reading. The address and reasons of the dissent of the minority of the Convention of the State of Pennsylvania to their constituents. It was not until after the termination of the late glorious contest, talking about the war, which made the people of the United States an independent nation, that any defect was discovered in the present Confederation. So the war was over before anybody decided that the Articles of Confederation had any defects. Imagine that. It, meaning the Articles of Confederation, was formed by some of the ablest patriots in America. It carried us successfully through the war. And the virtue and patriotism of the people with their disposition to promote the common cause supplied the want of power in Congress. That's a very critical statement. The requisition of Congress for the 5% impost was made before the peace, so as early as February of 1781, but was prevented taking effect by the refusal of one state. Yet it is probable every state in the Union would have agreed to this measure at that period had it not been for the extravagant terms in which it was demanded. The requisition was new molded in the year 1783 and accompanied with an additional demand for certain supplementary funds for 25 years. Peace had now taken place, and the United States found themselves laboring under a considerable foreign and domestic debt incurred during the war. People remember that. Foreign and domestic debt. The requisition of 1783 was commensurate with the interest of the debt as it was then calculated, but it has been more accurately ascertained since that time. The domestic debt has been found to fall several millions of dollars short of the calculation. That is extremely important. The Federalists were telling the people, you owe millions and millions of dollars in debt on the domestic debt. And in actuality, that was a highly inflated number. The Federalists, who were stockholders in the Bank of North America, had inflated the amount of interest that were owed to them. And so they wanted more money collected from the people to pay them the interest on stocks that they had bought in the Bank of North America with money that was given to them by Robert Morris. But
Mike,
go ahead.
Mike, all these people mentioned that the Pennsylvania sent to the convention, they were all stockholders.
Yes, imagine
they
that.
Were not just esquires; they were also stockholders.
Stockholders in the Bank of North America.
That was owed to. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. No wonder they acted as individuals.
Right. So the domestic debt has been found to fall several millions of dollars short of the calculation. In other words, it's been inflated by the people who want your money. And it has lately been considerably diminished by large sales of Western lands. But they weren't given credit for that by the Federalists. The Federalists still wanted these inflated numbers of dollars from the American taxpayer. The states have been called on by Congress annually for supplies until the general system of finance proposed in 1783 should take place. It was at this time that the want of an efficient federal government was first complained of, and that the powers vested in Congress were found to be inadequate to the procuring of the benefits that would result from the Union. This also tells the story. These Federalists wanted to collect interest on money on stocks that they had never paid for themselves, money that had been embezzled from the federal treasury by Robert Morris and given to these people so that they could buy stock in the Bank of North America. The impost was granted by most of the states, but many refused the supplementary funds. Ooh, the extra money the Federalists wanted. The annual requisitions were set at naught by some of the states, while others complied with them by legislative acts but were tardy in their payments. And Congress found themselves incapable of complying with their engagements and supporting the federal government. It was found that our national character was sinking in the opinion of foreign nations. The Congress could make treaties of commerce but could not enforce the observance of them. We were suffering from the restrictions of foreign nations who had shackled our commerce, meaning Great Britain, while we were unable to retaliate. And all now agreed that it would be advantageous to the Union to enlarge the powers of Congress, that they should be enabled in the amplest manner to regulate commerce and to lay and collect duties on the imports throughout the United States. There's a big difference in levying duties on imports and direct taxation. And direct taxation was what the Federalists wanted. With this view, a convention was first proposed by Virginia and finally recommended by Congress for the different states to appoint deputies to meet in convention, and I quote, for the purposes of revising and amending the present Articles of Confederation so as to make them adequate to the exigencies of the Union, unquote. This recommendation, the legislatures of 12 states complied with so hastily as not to consult their constituents on the subject. Ooh, so members of Congress did something without consulting their constituents. Imagine that crap. Started early, didn't it? And though the different legislatures had no authority from their constituents from the purpose, they probably apprehended the necessity would justify the measure, and none of them extended their ideas at that time further than revising and amending the present Articles of Confederation. Pennsylvania, by the act appointing deputies, expressly confined their powers to this subject, and though it is probable that some of the members of the assembly of this state had at that time in contemplation to annihilate the present Confederation, as well as the Constitution of Pennsylvania. Ooh, I mentioned that before. Yet the plan was not sufficiently matured to communicate it to the people or the public. The majority of the legislature of this commonwealth were at that time under the influence of the members only of the city of Philadelphia. They agreed that the deputies sent by them to convention should have no compensation for their services, which determination was calculated to prevent the election of any member who resided at a distance from the city. People, can you see the evil genius here that was effect? Any delegate that is chosen to attend the Constitutional Convention from the state of Pennsylvania must supply their own funds for doing so, which meant that the only people you got are the city from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. It was in vain for the minority to attempt electing delegates to the convention who understood the circumstances and the feelings of the people and had a common interest in them. Now, the people were not represented. They found a disposition in the leaders of the majority of the House to choose themselves and some of their dependents. Oh, my, imagine that. The delegates picked the delegates from the legislature. When picking delegates to the Constitutional Convention, pick themselves or their dependents. Wow, ain't government great? The minority attempted to prevent this by agreeing to vote for some of the leading members who they knew had influence enough to be appointed at any rate in hopes of carrying with them some respectable citizens of Philadelphia in whose principles and integrity they could have more confidence. But even in this, they were disappointed, except in one member. The eighth member was added at a subsequent session of the assembly. The Continental Convention met in the city of Philadelphia at the time appointed. It was composed of some men of excellent characters and others who were more remarkable for their ambition and their cunning than they were for their patriotism, and of some who had been opponents to the independence of the United States. Jared Ingersoll, Tench Cox. The delegates from Pennsylvania were, six of them, uniform and decided opponents to the Constitution of this Commonwealth. That's critical, people. Six of the people selected were opposed to the Constitution of their own state. The convention sat upwards of 4 months. The doors were kept shut and the members brought under the most solemn engagements of secrecy. 50 years. Some of those who opposed their going so far beyond their powers retired hopeless from the convention. Others had the firmness to refuse signing the plan altogether, and many who did sign it did it not as a system they wholly approved, but as the best that could be then obtained. He's talking about Benjamin Franklin. And notwithstanding the time spent on the subject, it is agreed on all hands to be a work of haste and accommodation. Accommodation to whom? While the gilded chains were forged in secret conclave, the meaner instruments of despotism without were busily employed in alarming the fears of the people with dangers which did not exist, and exciting their hopes of greater advantages from the expected plan than even the best government on earth could produce. That's a very polite way of saying they lied through their ass. The proposed plan had not many hours issued forth from the womb of suspicious secrecy until such as were prepared for the purpose, were carrying about petitions for people to sign, signifying their approbation of the system when requesting the legislature to call a convention. While every measure was taken to intimidate the people against opposing it, the public papers, teemed with the most violent threats against those who should dare to think for themselves, and tar and feathers were liberally promised to all those who would not immediately join in supporting the proposed government, be it what it would. Under such circumstances, petitions in favor of calling a convention were signed by great numbers in and about the city before they had leisure to read and examine the system, many of whom, now that they are better acquainted with it and have had time to investigate the principles, are heartily opposed to it. The petitions were speedily handed to the legislature. Affairs in this situation, when on the 28th of September last, a resolution was proposed to the Assembly by a member of the House who had been also a member of the Federal Convention for calling a state convention, talking about George Clymer, to be elected within 10 days for the purpose of examining and adopting the proposed Constitution of the United States, though at this time the House had not received it from Congress. There's the evidence, Cal. This attempt was opposed by a minority who, after offering every argument in their power to prevent the precipitate measure without effect, absented themselves from the House as the only alternative left them to prevent the measure taking place previous to their constituents being acquainted with the business. That violence and outrage, which had been so often threatened, was now practiced. Some of the members were seized the next day by a mob collected for that purpose and forcibly dragged to the House, and there detained by force while the quorum of the legislature so formed completed their resolution. We shall dwell no longer on the subject. The people of Pennsylvania have been already acquainted therewith. We would only further observe that every member of the legislature previously to taking his seat by solemn oath or affirmation declares, quote, that he will not do or consent to any act or thing whatever that shall have a tendency to lessen or abridge their rights and privileges as declared in the Constitution of this state. Cal, that's extremely important. Those delegates were told that they could not endorse anything which would alter the powers that they had under their state constitution. And they did it anyway. If that constitution, which they are so solemnly sworn to support, cannot legally be altered but by a recommendation of the Council of Censors, who alone are authorized to propose alterations and amendments, and even these must be published at least 6 months for the consideration of the people. Think about that, Cal. In the state of Pennsylvania, before you could amend the Constitution of the state of Pennsylvania, the amendments had to be published to the public for 6 months, and they were trying to ram the Constitution down their throats without even seeing it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, they haven't even received it yet. Well, they had by this time, but by the time when they were calling for all this was happening, they hadn't even received it. The House hasn't even officially received it, let alone their constituents haven't received it.
Exactly. This next sentence is so profound. The proposed system of government for the United States, talking about the new Constitution, if adopted, will alter and may annihilate the Constitution of the state of Pennsylvania, and therefore the legislature has no authority whatsoever to recommend the calling of a convention for that purpose. That is profound. That the constitutional convention, ratification convention in Pennsylvania was unconstitutional according to the state constitution. Now, when the hell have we ever been taught this?
Yeah. So they not only were violating the Articles of Confederation, they were violating the Constitution of Pennsylvania.
The state that picked them.
The state constitution. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're violating two constitutions now.
Right. This proceeding could not be considered as binding on the people of this Commonwealth. The House was formed by violence. Some of the members composing it were detained there by force, which alone would have vitiated any proceedings to which they were otherwise competent. But had the legislature been legally formed, this business was absolutely without their power. So a criminal conspiracy occurred in Pennsylvania as well. And it says, in this situation of affairs where the subscribers elected members of the Convention of Pennsylvania, a convention called by a legislature in direct violation of their constitution and composed in parts of members who were compelled to attend for that purpose to consider of a constitution proposed by a convention of the United States who were not appointed for the purpose of framing a new form of government, but whose powers were expressly confined to altering and amending the present Articles of Confederation. Therefore,
The members of the Continental Convention in proposing the plan acted as individuals. There we go again, Cal. And not as deputies from Pennsylvania. The assembly who called the state convention acted as individuals and not as the legislature of Pennsylvania. Nor could they or the convention chosen on their recommendation have authority to do any act or thing that can alter or annihilate the Constitution of Pennsylvania, both of which will be done by this new Constitution. Nor are their proceedings, in our opinion, at all binding on the people. Wow. The election for members of the convention
Mike.
Go ahead.
It's important to note that the Articles of Confederation had no jurisdiction or binding effect upon the individuals of the states, to where this new Constitution being proposed would. That
Absolutely.
Needs to get sink into people's heads. The federal government had no jurisdiction over the individual of any of the respective states. None whatsoever. The federal government couldn't mandate you to wear a mask. They couldn't do it back then.
And they couldn't mandate you take a vaccine. They couldn't mandate you pay taxes.
They couldn't do any of these things. Yes, they couldn't do any of this. All this stuff that everybody's complaining about, none of that could have happened under the Articles of Confederation.
And people,
it's just important for people to note that.
And people, any of you out there who are so damn stupid as to believe that this fraudulent exercise brought on the people was done by inspiration from God, you've lost your frickin' mind. And then to continue, the election for members of the convention was held at so early a period and the want of information was so great that some of us did not know of it until after it was over. Ooh. A lot of people in the state of Pennsylvania didn't even know they were having a convention until it was over. And we have no reason to believe that great numbers of the people of Pennsylvania have not yet had an opportunity of sufficiently examining the proposed Constitution. We apprehend that no change can take place that will affect the internal government or Constitution of this Commonwealth, unless a majority of the people should evidence a wish for such a change. Holy cow, there they really nail it. That the Constitution could not be ratified without a majority of the people of the state of Pennsylvania agreed to it because it altered their state constitution. But on examining the number of votes given for members of the present state convention, we find that of upwards of 70,000 free men who are entitled to vote in Pennsylvania, the whole convention has been elected by about 13,000 voters. And though two-thirds of the members of the convention have thought proper to ratify the proposed constitution, yet those two-thirds were elected by the votes of only 6,800 free men. Damn, that one just nails it right there, Cal. That one shows the fraudulent here. That there were, 70,000 people? 70,000 free men who are entitled to vote in Pennsylvania, but the people who ratified the Constitution were elected by 6,800? That's not even 10%, Cal.
Not even.
I don't understand why people can't see the fraud of this whole thing.
The whole scheme.
Yeah, it says, and I will continue, in the city of Philadelphia and some of the eastern counties, the junto that took the lead in the business agreed to vote for none but such as would solemnly promise to adopt the system in toto without exercising their judgment. Here again is the fraud. The people who were elected to go there had to agree that they would accept the system before they ever saw it. And they were not allowed to exercise their judgment. In many of the counties, the people did not attend the elections as they had not an opportunity of judging of the plan. Others did not consider themselves bound by the call of a set of men who assembled the state house in Philadelphia and assumed the name of the legislature of Pennsylvania.
and some were prevented from voting by the violence of the party who were determined all events to force down the measure. Through such lengths did the tools of despotism carry their outrage, that in the night of the election for members of the convention in the city of Philadelphia, several of the subscribers, being then in the city to transact your business, were grossly abused, ill-treated, and insulted while they were quiet in their lodgings, though they did not interfere nor had anything to do with the said election, but, as they apprehend, because they were supposed to be adverse to the proposed Constitution and would not tamely surrender their sacred rights, which you had committed to their charge. Gosh, Cal, this, I don't know. Is this affecting you the way it is me?
Oh, yeah. It just, so much injustice going on here. So much, so many lies, so much deceit. It's almost overwhelming, but continue, Mike.
The convention met, and the same disposition was soon manifested in considering the proposed Constitution that had been exhibited in every other stage of this business. We were prohibited by an express vote of the convention from taking any question on the separate articles of the plan and reduced to the necessity of adopting it or rejecting it in toto.
So even in convention, they couldn't parse through it.
Right.
Because they had chosen people who were already committed to ratifying it without even reading it or parsing through it even. So once again, any voice of dissent, any question was not allowed.
Well, here, let's address
take it or leave it.
Well, it says in toto, but then let's look at this part. This is interesting. 'Tis true the majority permitted us to debate on each article, but restrained us from proposing any changes to those articles. They also determined not to permit us to enter on the minutes our reasons of dissent against any of the articles, nor even on the final question, our reasons of dissent against the whole of the Constitution. Thus situated, we entered on the examination of the proposed system of government and found it to be such as we could not adopt without, as we conceived, surrendering up of the dearest of our rights. We offered our objections to the convention and opposed those parts of the plan which, in our opinion, would be injurious to you in the best manner we were able, and closed our arguments by offering the following propositions to the convention. And I think it's critical here at this point, Cal, that we note that in the papers, the newspapers around the city of Philadelphia, when the ratification convention was taking place, only the words of James Wilson, McKean, and Clymer were listed in the newspapers. The people who read the newspapers thought everybody at the convention was for it, and no one was expressing any thoughts against it whatsoever.
And their dissent was kept out of the minutes, so there is no official record of their dissent.
And that's why they wrote this, what we're reading.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there is no official, I mean, though these were parts of the convention, and usually the minutes taken record, you know, what's going on in the convention. Both sides, this whole part of it was voted on to be strictly not put in the minutes. That's profound. That's so that history will not record the dissent.
Right. Well, then
so they did this, yes.
Then we go into, with this writing, we go into what they proposed, which was in essence the Pennsylvania Bill of Rights. And so, you know, for those folks out there who might be interested, Cal, if they will contact me, you know, through any of our mediums, I'll be happy to provide them with this document. But I want to jump from those.
Mike, can you send that to me? Because I only have that last part of it.
Okay.
All right. The last paragraph is where mine starts. I mean, that whole first part of it, I don't have.
Missing?
So if you
imagine that.
Imagine that. Yeah.
Well, here is, I've skipped the amendments.
And there were 14 amendments they proposed.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll skip those because those are pretty common, what they wanted. Freedom of the press, no standing army, all of the, no direct taxation.
No direct taxation. Please.
Yeah. So these were the things they wanted, but let me skip to this because I think this is extremely important. It says, during the discussion, we met with many insults and personal abuse. We were not even treated with decency during the sitting of the convention by the persons in the gallery of the House. However, we flatter ourselves that in contending for the preservation of those invaluable rights, you have thought proper to commit to our charge. We acted with a spirit becoming free men and being desirous that you might know the principles which actuated our conduct and being prohibited from inserting our reasons of dissent on the minutes of the convention. We have subjoined them for your consideration. As to you alone, we are accountable. It remains with you whether we will think those inestimable privileges which you have so ably contended for should be sacrificed at the shrine of despotism, or whether you mean to contend for them with the same spirit that has so often baffled the attempts of an aristocratic faction to rivet the shackles of slavery on you and your unborn posterity. Our objections were comprised under three general heads of dissent. For example, we dissent first because it is the opinion of most celebrated writers on government and confirmed by uniform experience that a very extensive territory cannot be governed by the principles of freedom otherwise than by a confederation of republics possessing all of the powers of internal government but united in the manage of their general and foreign concerns. If any doubt could have been entertained of the truth of the foregoing principle, it has been fully removed by the concession of Mr. James Wilson, the Caledonian, one of the majority on this question, and who was one of the deputies in the late General Convention. In justice to him, we will give his own words, and they are as follows. For example, the extent of country for which the new Constitution was required produced another difficulty in the business of the Federal Convention. It is the opinion of some celebrated writers that to a small territory, the democratical, to a middling territory, as Montesquieu has termed it, the monarchical, and to an extensive territory, the despotic form of government is best adapted. The despotic form of government is best adapted. This is what James Wilson said. And James Wilson would be a member of the Supreme Court. Regarding then the wide and almost unbounded jurisdiction of the United States, at first view, the hand of despotism seemed necessary to control, connect, and protect it. What? For we know that although our constituents would cheerfully submit to the legislative restraints of a free government, they would spurn at every attempt to shackle them with a despotic power. Cal, did James Wilson just say that we must have a despotic government to control a country this large, even though the people would not want it?
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, the people went along with it anyway.
And again, in another part of his speech, he continues, and I quote.
Well, we're talking about the James Wilson speech on October 6th.
Right.
Courtyard speech. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he says, and then, is it probable that the dissolution of the state governments and the establishment of one consolidated empire would be eligible in its nature and satisfactory to the people in its administration? I think not. As I have given reasons to show that so extensive a territory cannot be governed, connected, and preserved, but by the supremacy of a despotic power. All of the exertions of the most potent emperors of Rome were not capable of keeping that empire together, which in extent is far inferior to the dominion of America. Wilson said it. Straight up,
yeah.
The only way we can rule you people is with despotism. Cal, you know, at times I'm just rendered speechless.
I mean, you go back through a lot of what the Federalists, not the anti-Federalists, but the Federalists said, and you're like, how did people go along with this? You know, a lot of the words of Hamilton, of James Wilson, it just, wait a minute, did you listen to what they said? Did you not take them for their word?
Gouverneur Morris said at the Constitutional Convention, if reason will not unite the people, the sword will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. And that was their reason.
1861. Gee Louise. I don't know what more evidence people need to have to understand what this Constitution is and has done.
Let me throw another paragraph here at you. We dissent, okay. Secondly, because the powers vested in Congress by this Constitution must necessarily annihilate and absorb the legislative, executive, and judicial powers of the states and produce from their ruins one consolidated government, which from the nature of things will be an iron-handed despotism, as nothing short of the supremacy of a despotic sway would connect and govern these United States under one government, which James Wilson admitted. As the truth of this position is of such decisive importance, it ought to be fully investigated. And if it is founded to be clearly ascertained, for should it be demonstrated that the powers vested by this Constitution in Congress will have such an effect as necessarily to produce one consolidated government, the question then will be reduced to this short issue. Whether satiated with the blessings of liberty, whether repenting of the folly of so recently asserting their unalienable rights against foreign despots at the expense of so much blood and treasure and such painful and arduous struggles, the people of America are now willing to resign every privilege of free men and submit to the dominion of an absolute government that will embrace all of America in one chain of despotism. Or whether they will, with virtuous indignation, spurn at the shackles prepared for them and conduct and confirm their liberties by a conduct becoming free men. That the new government will not be a confederacy of states as it ought, but one consolidated government founded upon the destruction of the several governments of the states, we shall now show. And, folks, I'm about halfway through this, and there's no way I'm going to finish it before the end of the program. So, like I said, any of you who would like this in its complete form, as Cal has illustrated, you can find it where it's not in its complete form, and I wonder why that is so. Well, comments, Cal?
Well, first off, can you send me that full copy? That's just mind-boggling.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, please. People, you feel those shackles upon you, those chains, you know, and you're seeing through this where they were forged. It was with the Constitution, with this criminal conspiracy, this government that everyone is suffering under. I mean, if you're, everybody's complaining about, you know, you feel it. You can feel those gilded chains. Well, Mike has just showed you where those chains were forged. It was with this criminal conspiracy of the Constitution. That's, I don't know how better to explain it. This is where they were forged, people. This is it.
Well, Cal,
this is when it happened.
Everything that the people are suffering under today in this country is authorized by the Constitution.
Yeah, the Necessary and Proper Clause.
Every damn thing
everything.
That you find objectionable, everything that you hate, and everything you think, oh, if we can just get the right person in office, if we can vote the right person in office, this thing will work. No, hell no, it's working now. This is what it was designed to do.
Heads. That's what it does.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who pulls the rope, that blade comes down and off comes the head. That's what the guillotine does.
Yeah, and that who was it who said that electing
electing good men to government is like issuing a machine gun to a priest?
Yeah, exactly. This alone, just from Pennsylvania alone, these dissents, they should point you to where all these problems came from, why it's such a mess that things are today. It's not because the wrong people are in government. It's because of government, because of this government, because of the powers delegated to this government, which once again are unlimited because they are implied powers. Madison said so himself. Again, another Federalist telling you in the House of Representatives, on the House floor, it's on the record, it's in the annals of Congress, that government cannot be restrained by express powers. Government has to have implied powers. You can't have restrained government with implied powers. That means you can have whatever the government thinks is necessary and proper. Oh, yeah, they gave themselves that power, too, didn't they?
Hey, Cal, let me make
an analogy here,
buddy.
Okay.
Do we really think that we could change the mafia by being allowed to elect new hitmen?
Some people must think they can. It's futile, but yeah. I mean, how many people, you know, they thought, you know, I was one of them at one time, you know, hey, we can change, you know, get involved, change it from the inside. Until I got involved, then I saw how corrupt it was. And that's what kind of opened my eyes and pushed me down the path where I am today. It's too corrupt. There's a problem here. And in digging into it, you know, which is this stuff from today, is enough to convince any thinking, enlightened person of where the problem is. It's with the system. It was designed to do exactly what it's doing.
Well,
in fact, I think you know, there was, you know, we discussed this on one of your Teach Me groups, is, you know, or last week, Jennifer put in, you know, the Constitution, Abraham Lincoln, he exercised the Constitution to its fullest extent. He didn't violate it. He exercised it the way it was meant. Because the states surrendered their sovereignty when they acceded to the Constitution. They were warned about it, again in this, you know, in these dissents. They were warned about it by the other anti-federalists, Patrick Henry. He warned about it. He said they're going to absorb the states. They didn't know that Madison's evil genius, well, we're going to keep the states around to be subordinately useful because, you know, hey, when the government gets a lot of pressure about, you know, mandating masks, well, no, we'll make the governors of the states do it.
Yeah, but not only that.
You're watching it work.
Cal, but think what they did here, and I think people overlook this. Why would you pay if you hired someone to repair your car and your car was fine? Why would you take your car, drive two blocks down the road, and hire someone else to do it again? That's exactly what has been created with state governments to do something which can then be totally overruled by another group of people called the federal government. And so you're paying multiple people to do the same job, and it has bankrupted you. And the people in the states have no say-so. The people that you vote in the states, everything that you elect these people to do can be overturned by one clown in a black gown.
Yeah, if they so choose, they can do that.
Well, Cal, we're running close to time here. I did want to throw in a couple of things. Number one, people, please, I would like to remind you again about our friend D.W. Keep him in your prayers, please. And also, I have three Telegram channels now, Rebel Madman, Constitutional Fraud, and Teach Me True History. And we have incorporated a Q&A period on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern for our Teach Me True History group. I would invite you folks to join that Telegram group and to join our conference on Tuesday nights. We learned a lot of things last week, didn't we, Cal? Or this week?
Yes, we did. It's really interesting and really fun to have difference of opinion, especially from other people who've, you know, also done deep dives into history.
Because that it is.
You get other perspectives, you know, you get other vantage points, and they'll say something that you might not have thought of. And it's like, and all that does is just colorize your own picture of history and of the reality of the world and what's going on. So yeah, I'm just glad we do it.
I feel
blessed to be able to participate in it.
Well, thank you, Cal. You are a vital member of that group. And also, folks, on Sunday evening next at 6 p.m. Eastern, I will be joined by my old former NSA employee buddy, Blackbird 9 out of North Kakalaki. You know, it's ironic that we're a generation apart in our time at the No Such Agency. But also the fact that as we got into it, we found out that we were born and reared about 50 miles apart, although, again, separated by a generation. So the things I fell out with the government intelligence about, Blackbird 9 fell out with those people a few years, well, a couple of decades later. His major fallout was over 9/11. So on Sunday evening, we will be discussing the question of exactly what are your inalienable rights.
Oh, that sounds excellent.
So I think
people need to understand what their rights are. I mean, that's been lost. Of course, you know, the government's not going to teach you in their government schools what your rights are because you might want to assert them. And they can't have that.
Well, there's a reason that the Federalists voted unanimously to not include a Bill of Rights in their government.
Well, yeah, it would interfere with their plans.
But like people like James Wilson said, look, you don't need to worry about them because all of your rights are included in your state constitutions. But he didn't bother to tell them that the federal constitution annihilated the rights under their state constitutions. So it was a slight of hand trick. And again, folks, if you can support Revolution Radio go to the website, find out the ways that you can contribute to this bastion of free speech. We appreciate that. And also, Cal, anything you want to add in the last few seconds we got here, buddy?
I would just encourage anybody to avail themselves of the opportunity to participate in your Telegram channels or rebelmadman.org. I mean, there is, I don't know of anyone who's put out true history like this. It's not in academia. This is a history course that is, you know, priceless.
Well, thank you for that,
Cal.
It's
true history. This is priceless.
Thank you, Cal.
They're not going to teach you this in school, well, government schools. They're not.
They can't. They won't have a job.
Yeah.
Well, there's the music, folks. Thank you for being with us today on Dare to Think Out Loud. Thank you, Cal, for being there. Folks, God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend. Hope to see you next week.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Talk about decentralization and that.